So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's currently episode 33. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Ahsoka Tano. As always, I'm Mike B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hey everyone.
If you want to get involved in our conversation, you guys can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Also, today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. We also have t-shirts and buttons available for sale on our website, so feel free to check those out and let us know if there's anything you need. All right, Danya, so how are you doing today?
Pretty good. Yeah, I mean,
pretty good.
We record every Wednesday, so I'm usually in a pretty good mood because it's a bake-off day. So
it's a bake-off day and a day you get to talk about Star Wars. There's nothing bad.
Basically,
about that.
Yeah. You know, exactly.
I will tell you, last week I was like, I had the dumbest grin on my face all day while we were recording because, like, I missed talking about Star Wars. Actually, I think I just missed talking last week because the 2 weeks before I couldn't speak at all. And so when we were talking about, you know, all the Rogue One stuff, besides the fact that Rogue One had a new trailer, like, right, it was just super time, you know, it was just awesome, but, like, I got to talk about Star Wars, which made me really happy. So I love Wednesdays when we get to talk about Star Wars. So I'm glad you're here.
All right. I was going to say, though, are you sure it was that and it wasn't that you were a little high on painkillers? Like, or was it like a mixture of both?
It could have been that. So let's move on to the news. Forget about talking about my high on painkillers. Let's just move on to the news there, all right? Anyway, so Alan Tudyk revealed he is cut from Rogue One. Now, not K2SO.
Not K2SO.
I did that on purpose, Anya. So not K2SO. But Alan Tudyk himself actually had a chance to be in a cameo as himself, not as the robot K2SO. And he just found out that he has been cut from the film. Apparently, he had a role as a pilot, so I'm assuming he was probably a rebel pilot, and apparently they cut his scene out of the film, which is kind of sad, because it would have been kind of cool to see, hey, Alan Tudyk is right there, and he's also right there as K2SO, and maybe he said something really cool like, you know, just a leaf on the wind, like he did from Firefly. You know, who knows?
No. This is the thing. It's not the Firefly connection.
No, it's not.
It's the Con Man connection that was supposed to be happening with this cameo, because it was supposed to be linked to Rey, who is the character that he plays in Con Man, the series, which is Alan Tudyk's... It's a web series that he does.
And
yeah. Which is excellent. If you guys haven't watched it, go watch it. It's so funny. If you love sci-fi stuff and the convention circuit and all of that, go and watch it. You'll get a really good kick out of it. It's funny. It sort of pokes fun at stuff, but not in the way that is offensive or belittling the community. It does it in a really heartfelt way. It's great. Go and watch it. But yeah, it was supposed to be that character, which I'm kind of disappointed about, because that would have been great.
I'll agree with you on that. Yeah, so it's a little, you know, here's the thing, is I'm sad they cut it, but at the same time, you know, it's gonna be like a DVD extra, so it's
almost certainly.
Yeah, so it's like, that's all right. I'm okay with it. But yes, it's gonna be something that we'll see to look forward to in you know, in the Rogue One DVD set, and then we'll have to, or maybe it won't be in the first one, maybe it'll be in the 3D release of it, you know, you gotta buy a year later, but we'll find out. Who knows? Anyway, moving on from that, we also had the Rogue One character posters revealed. So last week we had a new Rogue One poster as well as a new Rogue One trailer, and now we got 8 different character posters. Just first thoughts, Danya, what'd you think of these?
They poked holes in my theory. It was only a couple of days between me making that theory and them like shooting it down so hard, because every single one of these character posters has that kind of grid, glowing grid over there.
A projection of the Death Star plans, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, they're going, oh, maybe it's something like super subtle that's going to link to the plot about Jin and then they're like, no, we're just, nope. it's a cool effect
that we could do. So it's pretty cool. You know, we had Jin Erso's poster where she and they say a checkered past, a greater cause, hashtag Rogue One. And it's got the picture of Jin, which is, it's very reminiscent of the poster that was revealed. You know, she's got the same look and everything, same direction, as well as the Death Star plans on her. But I was actually more excited about everyone else's more so than hers, because, like I said, it was very similar to the Rogue One poster that came out last week for her. But we got a new one from Cassian Andor. You know, he's the intelligence officer of the Rebel Alliance. And we got one from Chirrut. Is it Emwe?
Emwe, yeah.
Emwe, yeah. You know, and I will say, when we saw Chirrut in the trailer, you know, with the lines about the Force, I was like, oh man, I'm going to love this guy already. Like, I'm super excited for his character. And of course, we got Baze and Bodhi in there. Bodhi had his wonderful Rogue One line.
I'm super excited for more of Bodhi. Like, he's probably one of the characters we've gotten the least about so far.
Yeah.
But he's, for some reason, he's one of the ones I'm most excited to see more of, for that reason.
I have this weird feeling, and I could be completely wrong here, but I have this weird feeling that Baze, Malbus, and Bodhi are going to like hang out together a little bit more. And I feel like Baze is this, like, he's the soldier, you know what I mean? He's the soldier person, and he's going to have like this dry humor, but I feel like he's going to be really funny for some reason. The only reason I think that is because Bodhi was really funny with like Rogue One, like his line there. So I feel like Baze and Bodhi are going to spend time together. And I feel like Baze is going to be like this gruff soldier guy who's going to have this really dry sense of humor. And maybe it's not even meant to be super funny, but I'm going to find it hilarious. So I'm excited for the Baze poster as well as just to see it. And then, of course, we got K2SO, not Alan Tudyk, but the K2SO poster, which I will tell you is actually kind of scary looking. K2 as this droid, it's not very friendly looking compared to like C-3PO or 2-D2.
I mean, I don't think he's supposed to be, considering where he came from.
He's not. He's an Empire droid that's been reprogrammed, yeah. So I get it. But the poster is kind of scary. Like, I almost don't know if I'd want it in my room at night. His eyes just, like, staring at you would probably freak me out at night. I don't know. What do you think of that poster?
It is a little bit creepy, sure, but it makes sense.
Okay, and then we got a Saw Gerrera one, which I will tell you, just save the rebellion, save the dream, you know, from the trailer. Just, it's heart wrenching. I don't think Saw's going to survive much past this film. But, you know, he's definitely looking very regal. And then director Orson Krennic. Krennic just looks calculating. Like, he is this film's Tarkin / Thrawn. He's definitely calculating and scary looking.
It'll be really interesting, because we had that conversation before. I really do want to revisit looking at, like, all of these characters, like Thrawn, Krennic, Tarkin, and Hux, once we've got a little bit more of each of them.
I think so.
See, like, how they differ and how they're similar.
Yeah, we'll have to wait till Catalyst comes out and after the film before we can kind of talk about the section of those four characters, because I think they're all going to have some similarities, but they'll all have a different, you know, they're not all the same character. They're different, but they're all dangerous in their own way. So yeah, I agree with you completely on that. Man, like, I'm going to say this, the Krennic one, they say cruel, brilliant, obsessed. Like, that's what Star Wars posted. And I will say that is what he looks like. One part about these posters that I wanted to mention that I'm really a big fan of is the logo for Rogue One on all of them. You know, we've seen the Rogue One, A Star Wars Story logo a lot. You know, it's been the gold on the black starfield. This one, because it's on top of the characters, is still says Rogue One, A Star Wars Story in the same logo that we've seen before, but we have the Rebellion logo directly behind it, and in the bottom right of it says 12/16, which is obviously the release date of the film. I really like the Rogue One, A Star Wars Story on top of that red Rebel logo. I just think it looks awesome. Like, I kind of just want that on black or something, because I really like that logo. Like, it's obviously, I've always loved that Rebellion logo, just for a long time, but that Rogue One on top of it, I think, just really stands out, and I like it.
Yeah, I love these posters a lot. I think they look really, really cool. I do kind of, like, really want the one where they're all together, though. You know, the
one that came out the week before?
Yeah, the one that came out the week before. Like, if I was going to, like,
get one poster,
have one to put,
if I was going to get one
to put on my wall, it would be that one. But only because I would feel like I'd have to have every single one of the character posters, and I definitely do not have the space to put
Having a room where with 8 full-size posters up would be definitely difficult to do. No, I agree. If you're going to have one, and at the same time, like, if you had the Force Awakens poster, you know, that we all know, the Rogue One one with all of them on it is very reminiscent of that, so it kind of would balance that out. So, I agree. I like all the posters, all 9 posters that have come out over the last 2 weeks. So, moving on, we got some Force Awakens news. You know, months ago, we talked about the new Force Awakens Blu-ray coming out. That is going to be the 3D edition, which I'm still working on trying to see if I can buy another copy of the movie, because I have 3 copies of it. This would be number 4. But the Blu-ray edition is going to have 2 major things. It's going to have 2 things. It's going to have some new deleted scenes, and we saw a new deleted scene from Entertainment Weekly. It shows Unkar Plot at Maz's castle, where he confronts Rey and Chewbacca. So we always knew that Maz loves Chewbacca. She loves that Wookiee. Apparently, Chewie did make it eventually to Maz's castle at some point in time. And, Unkar Plot confronts Rey, tries to take her, tells her that she's going to pay for taking the Millennium Falcon, let alone that, Chewie and Han Solo have taken it back rightfully. But she pulls her gun on him, and he just takes it from her fairly easily, and Chewbacca comes in to save it. What do you think of this deleted scene, Danya?
I can see why it was deleted. I don't feel like I don't feel like it added anything to the story. I think that scene at Maz's castle was pretty streamlined and pretty good as it was. There was enough going on already in respect to them trying to, like, work out what they're going to do, getting Rey and Finn to the resistance base, and then Finn basically being like, nah, I want to go, and then Rey going down into, like, the basement area and finding Luke's lightsaber. Like, there was already
quite a lot going on. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot to push the plot along, and there was a lot that we needed to digest already. Throwing in another character with, like, no explanation for, like, how he managed to track them down, how he got off Jakku, because, the First Order did a real number on Jakku when they were trying to, like, hunt down Rey and Finn and BB-8. So, I feel like it just added an unnecessary complication to things. It was kind of cool to see Rey confront him, but I can absolutely see why they deleted it. And this plays into some talk that I heard about this particular deleted scene in the first place, where then Chewbacca, after getting, like, after being, like, poked by Unkar Plot, like, rips his arm off or something, and I was like, oh, okay, that's,
I didn't see that in the deleted scene, but I can imagine, because he is poking Chewbacca.
He's
poking him specifically in the, where the bandage is for him when he got shot, but.
Yeah, no, it wasn't in the deleted scene. What I mean was, this was a deleted scene that was discussed or talked about, like, on forums and stuff, just after the film came out, to be like, oh, there was this scene in, like, I think it was either the script or something, and it was cut. So,
yeah, well, they filmed it. But also on that 3D release of The Force Awakens is an exclusive commentary with J.J. Abrams. And I will say, we got a sneak peek of what that commentary is going to look like, or sound like, if you will, when you watch the film. on the this week's Star Wars show, and we have a link to it if you want to see specifically that. But I will say this, Nanya, one of the things I love about DVDs and Blu-rays is the director commentary, you know, being able to, you know, change the audio from the film audio to what the director or cast have to say about the film. It's kind of intimate, if you will. I always imagine, like, these are like, you're kind of sitting in on an edit session with the director, and they're able to kind of just talk to you, like, whisper in your ear what's going on or what happened on set. And this does not disappoint. You know, when you see the preview here, it's the scene specifically when Rey is going to the chest at the bottom of Maz's castle, like we were talking about, and she's opening up the light, and she opens up the box to see the lightsaber, which... To her, she has no clue what it is, but for us as the audience, has a ridiculous amount of meaning, and we all know what it is. Mm-hmm. And so hearing JJ talk about it and kind of even refer to her as like a Cinderella at this point, going and discovering this unique item that's uniquely for her almost, it was just like, wow, like I really want to see this. Like that right there, the director commentary was almost enough for me to say, this is why I need to get the 3D version of the film, is so I can hear and listen to this director commentary of the film. So I was a fan of it.
I'm excited about a commentary with J.J. Abrams, like, about The Force Awakens and hearing, like, his thoughts on certain scenes and certain characters and lines, and hearing, like, little bits and pieces about what brought The Force Awakens to screens. Like, that's something that's really, really interesting. What frustrates me is that this is on a 3D release of The Force Awakens.
I agree with you 100% on that. Now, the question is, I don't know, until we get a full list of what's actually there, I'm wondering if the commentary is on the 3D version of it, or if it's on the 2D version that is part of the 3D. You know, like, because you can change audio when you film it. Like, or if it's going to be on both versions, which is going to be annoying because you don't have that when... on the one that was released, you know, months ago.
Yeah.
So, I get it that there's different versions and stuff, and there's going to be another Diamond Edition and exclusive, you know, twin set with Force Awakens and Rogue One. But at the same time, you're like, how many times can I buy the film for this awesome stuff?
Yeah.
So
I wish there was a way, like, you know, when you get a digital copy, if you could, like, purchase
update it. Oh, yeah, purchase the additional stuff. Like, honestly, I'd be glad to spend, like, the iTunes. I have the iTunes version as well as the Disney Anywhere version, as well as the Blue, you know, Target exclusive digital version, right? So I have all these additional versions, right? And it would be nice, like, on iTunes, like, oh, buy the exclusive 3D version. I get access to the 3D version of the film if you have a 3D TV. But you also get access to all the new features, the new deleted scenes, the new commentary. Like, that would be, you know, even if it was an additional $10, I'd be happy to spend $10 for it. But, you know.
Yeah, if I could buy the audio commentary separately and download it and add it to, like, the digital copy I've already got, I would do that. I would buy the audio commentary to add to a version I've already got. But I can't justify buying a 3D release of The Force Awakens, even for the commentary, because I don't have a 3D TV. I'm going to utilize maybe one thing out of that release, which is the audio commentary, if it comes on the 2D version of the film included in that release. If it's on the 3D version of the release,
you can listen to it and see it all distorted. So.
So
no, I get it.
It's like, I love it, and I love audio commentaries, and I think it's great, but it frustrates me that they're limiting how you're able to enjoy it. So it's all well and good getting a sneak peek on the Star Wars show, but also I'm like, well, for most people who can't afford a 3D TV or can't justify getting a 3D TV, it's kind of useless.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating. Yeah. It's all about accessibility and fans. There's so many different versions of films that come out now that it's really difficult to know when to buy something, and I hate having to double dip for buying stuff.
Yeah, I agree really, with you. Really do. It's, I don't know. I knew this was going to happen. Like I said, when the film came out, I bought it 3 times, and my wife was just like, "Yeah, it's all right. I know you. It's Star Wars, and I understand it." So, but buying it again this far, this late in the game now. She's like, I don't know if you can get a number four. But yeah, we'll find out.
Here's the thing, though. It's not that I don't buy multiple versions of something. For example, I've got multiple versions of Beauty and the Beast. I've got the original VHS. I've got the special edition VHS. Then I've got the original DVD release. I've got a couple of the anniversary releases that they've done. I got it on the 20th anniversary as well, where they did Blu-ray release and the Diamond Edition. And so, but the thing with that is that there were several years between each one, and they were to mark anniversaries, and some of them got vaulted, so they stopped producing the DVD for a while, and they stopped producing, they stopped putting the film out for a while, the Disney vault.
No, I get it. And this
sometimes.
And this is, the problem with this, I will say, I think the problem why a lot of us, or at least for me, I feel kind of about the releases. This is not even a year later. This is months later. And it's
that's my frustration, is that I'm not averse to, purchasing multiple versions of a film. If I really, really like it, and they do different anniversary editions of it that has, sometimes they update or, remaster the visuals or the sound or stuff, and stuff like that to,
make it better, Yeah, or even, what if they, what if you just held off and wait till all three of the new films, the trilogy films are done, and you buy the three box set that has, the commentary with all the directors and stuff, and all the deleted scenes, plus new, unique stuff for it, so, who knows, we'll see how that comes out. I will make sure I get a copy just for the sake of us reviewing it, but yeah, it's the 3D version's coming out. Like I said, I'm excited for the commentary from J.J. Abrams. This should be fun.
Yeah.
Moving on, though, the best Star Wars toy in the history of all Star Wars toys has been announced. The Star Wars Mouse Droid is coming to Walt Disney theme parks. It's remote control! How cool is this?
It's so cute. It's adorable.
So, you have to understand, the Mouse Droid has always been one of my favorite droids. Ever from, from the original Star Wars film to it just kind of, beeping along, and then, you see Han and Luke, and then Chewie goes, and it goes, whoop, and it runs away. It's oh man, this droid is awesome. And if you've seen, I linked to an article, Tanya, for you if you get a chance to look at it.
Yeah.
But it's the Robot Chicken's take on that specific scene. And there's actually a droid Imperial mouse driving the mouse droid who, as soon as Chewbacca roars, he turns around and he's all scared. And then at the end, he gets to the corner, he takes a sip from his little mouse flask. And, it's a big joke. It's the mouse droid, which is just wonderful. So the mouse droid is coming out. It is going to be exclusive at Disney parks, though, so you'll have to be able to go to a Disney park to purchase it in their Star Wars launch bay. There's also coming out along for Disney parks in the fall is the Imperial Comlink Bluetooth communicator. And I will say, this thing looks really cool. It looks just like the one Han Solo used in Star Wars A New Hope. It's Bluetooth, so you should be able to pair it with your phone. It comes with a belt clip, so you'll be able to talk on it and say, yeah, we're all fine here. We're good, Or say, yes, I'm TK427. So, yeah, it looks great, as well as other things that have come out. But those are the two things that stood out to me. Did anything that, that's coming out for the Disney parks exclusively stand out to you, Danya?
Yes, those goddamn blankets. There's a BB-8 and an R2.
Yep.
Yeah, BB-8 blanket and an R2 blanket, and they're so cute, and I want it. I want the BB-8 one so much. It's so cute.
Yeah, you might need to talk to somebody and be like, hey, who's going to Disneyland right now? Andrew, I know you live right there in Southern California.
Yeah, there's some, really cool Rogue One stuff that's coming out as well that's going to be available in the parks. Did you see all of the, really cool Disney Parks Rogue One merchandise?
Yes, I did. I don't have a link to it, but I know what you're talking about.
I've got them all up right now because I was re-looking at them. And there's so many cool clothes. There's some really, really cool designs. There's a really cool dress. There's this awesome, holographic, Rebel logo with, stars all over the top that says Rogue One, and there's an X-Wing. And God, there was a, like, a... See, I call it a jumper, but you guys don't... It's not a jumper to you guys. Is it sweater? Is
that... Yeah, a sweater. Yeah. I know what a jumper is. I did like Harry Potter. You know, I still like Harry Potter.
Yeah, I mean, some people might think I'm talking about, like, something else. That's happened before, where I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm wearing this really cute jumper, and they're like, isn't it a little, like, cold for you to be wearing a jumper? And I'm, like, going, that's exactly why I'm wearing one. Anyway, there's one with, like, the Star Wars logo on there with Rogue One underneath it, and it's got a really cool pattern. And there's some pins, because yeah, I'm,
they also
like,
have a reversible beanie with Shore Troopers, Stormtroopers on it, and then flip yes. it with Death Star. Yeah, there's just all such really yeah. cool stuff.
There's an X-Wing pilot pin that I want, like, so badly. I want that so much. Like, so much stuff.
There's so many things. The problem with Star Wars is there's just so much stuff that comes out that you just like, I want that. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. But yes, best thing ever, Mouse Droid is coming out. Check it out. Get one for your family. Get one for your household. Like, drive it around. Be like, it's a Mouse Droid. Like, I can't yeah. I can't wait. I love this mouse. I love the Mouse Droid. Who doesn't?
Yep.
All right. And this past week, we also had a new episode of Rebels. I think we're just going to be talking about Rebels every week on this show, just because how great it is.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, we thankfully at this point, well, this season of Rebels, at least, we've, like, been recording from the start of the season.
Versus, like, halfway through. So, yeah, yeah, you know, I like talking about Rebels, because I'm a fan of Rebels itself. Thanks. And I know you are, too. So, what do you think of this episode here? There's a couple things that I noticed about this episode that a lot of people were super excited about. But this episode all had to deal with, you know, the Twi'leks, Hera's family, and Thrawn. We got to see him in person again.
Yes, I thought it was really good. I always really like when we get to spend a bit more time with Hera, but Hera episodes are always really hit and miss for me. Sometimes we'll get Hera, like, focused episodes that are really interesting, and sometimes we get ones that are basically, like, it feels like a footnote, like, oh, we haven't spent time with Hera, I guess we should do an episode, but we don't really know what to do, so just... Mm-hmm. make one. Hera seems to get, like, the short end of the stick sometimes with, like, really good character-based stuff in her solo episodes. Mm-hmm. This one was really cool because we got to learn a little bit more about her family and the fact that they've she's lost her home, like, and the Kalikori Helum, mm-hmm. the Imperial occupation. So she gets to be slightly selfish for once in wanting to go back to get the heirloom in order to preserve her mother's memory, because it's essentially an artifact that's been passed down from generation to generation to generation to generation. And each person that it's passed down to, they add a little something more to the heirloom, so it changes. So she kind of goes with Ezra to go and get it back. Oh, Ezra and Chopper to go and get it back. And while, you know, the rest of the Imperial troops are, like, unbelievably incompetent, as always.
Just a little bit, you know, to capture what? Was it five of them?
Like, they can't. Yeah. It was,
but
it was
one of them's a Jedi, another one's a Mandalorian, and the other ones are freedom fighters. So I get it, but really... Five people, like, the entire army can't get?
Yeah, so the other thing is that, you know, Hera and Ezra and Chopper almost managed to, like, pretty much walk straight back out the front door with this heirloom and get away without getting caught. But then Thrawn shows up, and
it's almost a coincidence. It's not even like he's calculating and knows, but it's just like, oh,
yeah.
Well, hello there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he is very obviously in a completely different league. So,
well, now question: are you saying he's in a different league than Hera and Ezra, Imperial officers,
the other Imperials?
Yes, like, I would agree with you 100% on that. Like,
he's a completely different threat to anything that they've ever faced before.
Yeah, and because I think
he's smart, he's calculating, and he also knows them.
Yeah, like, and it's interesting because I think Hera recognizes how dangerous he is right away. And we also get some allusion to that earlier when Cham says he, you know, underestimated the commander of the base because he did something different than what he normally does. Well, it wasn't the commander of the base that did it. It was Thrawn who had commanded them to do this. And the fact that Thrawn put two and two together that the person stealing this for food money was not really some random Twi'lek, but actually Hera Syndulla, and knew who it was exactly from the get-go, it was just kind of like, wow. And the fact that he wanted to keep the Kalachori from Hera after he had taken it as kind of a memento, as a way to like, study her, is like, dude, you know he's got... like Thrawn definitely is a very different type of menace. Like I said, I'm excited to see Krennic in Rogue One, because I know he's going to be a lot like the Thrawn-type character. So, definitely, I agree with you 100% on Thrawn being on a completely different level than, you know, this Poe Dunk kind of, you know, commander at this one base on, you know, Ryloth that, you know, the rebel fighters, the freedom fighters have been able to kind of subvert the entire time. Now that Thrawn's there, it's like, it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, the other thing that really got me with this episode is when Hera eventually decides to, like, leave the heirloom and escape. Like, because her home and her family are not objects, and it's not a building. It's with the crew of the Ghost, and through them, and her father, and her mother's memory lives on in her and her father, and that's what's important. And I was basically like, ugh, feelings, no, please stop. So many feelings. What else did I really like about this episode? I actually just really like this episode in general. I thought it was pretty great. Oh, Mikhail brought up a point to me after I'd finished watching it, which is that we see Kanan in this episode deflecting blaster fire with his lightsaber. And she basically went, but how? How is he doing that? We know he can't see, but he can feel with the Force. So does blaster fire leave ripples in the Force so that he can
feel them? Well, there's a couple things. I might be able to answer some of that real quick. So it's interesting that they brought up Kalachori in this episode. You know, we know the creators of Rebels. We know they love the extended universe. And we talked about Star Wars The Old Republic last week, and guess what? In Star Wars The Old Republic, on the starting planet as a Jedi, there is a Twi'lek village called Kalachori Village, which is, you know, in the old extended universe, Kalachori was the beginning, which is why it's an heirloom, and they kind of add to it as a whole family. So it was really interesting that the word Kalachori became canon, maybe in a different way than what the Old Republic had it as, you know, which again, they made that game over 5 years ago. So it was interesting when that popped up, because I was like, hey, that's just like Star Wars The Old Republic. At the same time, there are characters you can make in that game called Merkulin who are essentially almost humans without eyesight, and they use the Force to see, and they can do exactly what Kanan did. The lore behind a lot of that, being able to deflect laser bolts and everything else without being able to see, is as you become more attuned to the Force, kind of like almost like Neo in The Matrix, where he can see everything as The Matrix, laser fire disrupts the rest of the flow of the Force. You know, that stuff would be almost like ripples in it. And so he may not be able to see the lasers, but he can see the disturbance around it. So that's where he's able to block it then.
Yeah, that's what again, I figured it might have been.
Like again, it's all EU stuff where I'm pulling from, but you know they love the EU. You know, like I said, and they're bringing stuff slowly back. You know, Thrawn was essentially EU also. So I'm going to say that you know being able to see is going to be he's become more attuned to the Force. He can see his surroundings through the Force, and the laser fire is the disturbance part that he can see. That's what I would argue. That's what it is, and how he's able to do it.
Yeah, I was thinking he'd feel like some kind of ripple, or like that he would have to learn how to time in order to be able to react to it. Because feeling it move through the Force, you would have to kind of figure out.
He's got Jedi reflexes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I understand that. But he's only very recently got his sight back.
And that's what's interesting, because we don't know the time between each episode. You know, maybe it's been like 5 weeks and he's progressed significantly farther. You know?
Yeah.
That's the
timing is so hard.
And that's the problem with Rebels, is there's no time markers. Like, there's no like, oh, this episode ended and this episode started. Especially when they're two completely different stories. You know, we know they were on a supply run to Ryloth. Cool. So that means they've had to have gone back to, you know, the base of operation. They had to get supplies. They had to load up. You know, that's at least a day, if not 2 days, plus the travel time, plus the time to get to Ryloth. So like, there is definitely some time in between there. How many days, weeks, months? We don't know. And that's the problem with the TV show. If it's not a two-parter or three-parter where it's like, you know, it picks up right where the last one left off, we just don't know how much time passes. It's kind of like when you watch A New Hope to Empire Strikes Back to Return of the Jedi. You know, unless you kind of look into it, you know, there really is no indicator of how much time has passed, other than between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, Han Solo says, Luke is a Jedi? I've been out of it for just a little bit. Like, you know, there is obviously stuff that happened in between. And that's where we're at here. We're between between Revenge of the Sith and Rogue One, or A New Hope at this point, and we're seeing what's happening. So we don't know how long time-wise, but definitely Kanan has been more attuned to it. So I'm really a big fan of this entire episode, and I can't wait till next week's episode.
I know, me too. I'm so excited. I'm just so looking forward to Rebels every
this
week.
Entire like season. This- I know, it's every Saturday. Yeah. I'm like, here we go. So it's fun. And if you're not watching Rebels, you guys definitely should. All three seasons are on iTunes. Definitely take a look at it there. If not, you know, take a look at it. Oh, I'm sure there's episodes on YouTube. I'm not saying watching it that way. It's on Disney XD, so if you have the app, take a look at that. But it's definitely worth checking out. Like, I'm a big fan of Rebels.
Same.
Yeah. All right. Same. Moving on to our spotlight topic. She was on Rebels. We got introduced to her on Clone Wars. We're talking about Ahsoka Tano. So Ahsoka Tano, just so you guys know, if you don't know who she is, she's a Togruta female. She was originally the Padawan learner of Anakin Skywalker and a hero of the Clone Wars. Alongside Anakin, she grew from a headstrong student into a very mature leader. But her destiny led along a very different path than the Jedi, where she left the Jedi Order. And then she shows up in Star Wars Rebels as Fulcrum. And at the end of Season 2, it was all about her, so we'll talk more about that in just a minute. So before we jump into it, we've been talking about the Ahsoka book. I have not had a chance to read it, Danya. I know you finished it already. I'm going to be reading it next week on my vacation. What do you think of the book, first of all?
It was incredible. I think it's right up there with, like, Bloodlines.
Oh, see, I'm so excited. So I have the book for my Kindle, and I have the audiobook. I used our Twitter code myself, or our Audible trial. So I have an Audible trial for the book. So I have both of them. So I have the really cool part of Whisper Sync, so I can listen to it while I'm in the plane and then read it while I'm on the boat or something like that. So I'm really excited that it's all going to sync to everything. So I'm really excited to listen to it and read it at the same time. But I'm waiting, because I'm like, I'm saving it for my trip. But yeah, I'm super excited now.
It's so good. Like, it explains so much.
Yeah, like, I heard that, and we'll talk a little bit about it. So there is some spoilers we'll talk about, but we'll try to keep it to a minimum spoilers, because I haven't read it, right, Danya?
I know. I feel like I don't know exactly what to say and what not to say, because, like, there's a lot that it reveals of what happened between, like, the Clone Wars and Rebels.
Oh, between that time, okay.
Yeah, then before Rebels as well.
Okay. Like, so it spans years then.
Yeah, it fills in some, like, really big gaps of information, and also helps solidify the timeline a little bit more for when things happened with the Empire. So it's really interesting.
All right. Well, let's start off when we're introduced to Ahsoka as a character. So we're introduced to Ahsoka in, obviously, the Star Wars Clone Wars series during the first, the movie part, where she's introduced as Anakin's Padawan, and he did not request a Padawan, but Master Yoda sent him to be, sent her to be Anakin's Padawan. In fact, Obi-Wan had to kind of trick Anakin, saying, oh, this should be my new Padawan, and it really turned out to be his Padawan, Ahsoka Tano. She is very headstrong, obviously strong to prove herself, and gets the nickname Snips. What do you think of that?
I just remember when Ahsoka was, like, first introduced, people being like, we don't need this character is useless, it makes no sense, blah, 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 blah. Like, I remember all of that from when she was first introduced, and people, like, really railing against her introduction.
I get it. You know, here's the thing. I will say, when she was introduced, like, I myself had that kind of mentality. Like, but Anakin Skywalker doesn't have a, you know, Padawan. He doesn't have it in Revenge of the Sith. You know, it's only 3 years. You're kind of like, meh. But I will say, I fell in love with Ahsoka very early on, after maybe one or two episodes, just because her personality was kind of like what I would say in a lot of ways. I would question a lot of things, and probably more headstrong, like, I want to try this first, and even if it doesn't work out, you know, I'm going to go through with it. But yes, I think Snips was kind of a nickname that was more of a picking, but became more of a term of endearment as time went on.
Yeah. And I really like it. I like it when nicknames do that. When they kind of start out where they're using it as a way to, like,
kind of pick on you, but...
Yeah, and then it kind of works out that it's something that becomes really personal to, like, your relationship with someone, and... What started off as something that was slightly more like, hey, don't call me that, becomes like an in-joke, almost, between the two of you.
It's more of a term of endearment, almost.
Yeah, I love it when that happens.
No, I agree. So, obviously, Ahsoka is introduced as Snips, and she really struggles at the beginning, you know. She has a lot to prove to herself, and over time, she does prove herself not only to Anakin Skywalker, but to the clones that he leads and that she leads. She becomes a very strong commander, as well as Rex and many of the clone troopers will respect her. In fact, in the very first episode, they say, you know, there's nothing like experience. And obviously, she came in thinking she was kind of, I would almost say, hot stuff. And none of them were like, well, prove it before you start leading us, even though you may outrank us. And sure enough, over time, she definitely... earned the respect, not only as a skilled fighter, but even as a strategist later on. I believe it was Ryloth. Yeah. She managed to rebound and help secure a victory at Ryloth, where she kind of did the strategic planning for it, which was huge in the Clone Wars series.
Yeah.
So.
She definitely grows, not quickly, but... at a pace that makes sense for the war that they're fighting and the character that they have. Like, for what she's involved in, she grows at a pace that makes sense in the story, even though when you look at it, like, you look at how far she's come as a character, you think, wow, all of that in the space of time
that 3 years. Seen.
Yeah.
Like, or less that's than 3 years, because it's before Revenge of the Sith. So.
Yeah. But then when you stop and you actually, like, watch the show, you're like, no, it makes sense that it happened in that way and at that pace, and it doesn't feel rushed, it doesn't feel... It feels real, like, so that progression for me.
I have a question for you, so I'm gonna turn this around. We're gonna deviate from Ahsoka, and any of you guys who are all about Ahsoka, I'll come back to it in a minute. I have a new Snoke theory.
Oh, God, here we go.
Now, it's not about Ahsoka at all, but as I was doing additional research about Ahsoka again, just to kind of review everything, do you know Ahsoka was killed in the Clone Wars series? If you remember that? Yeah? No?
No.
Yeah, she was killed and brought back to life by the daughter. When they went to... Do you remember when Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, and... Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, and Anakin went to the planet, I believe it was Morris. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. Let's see, son. But they went to the planet, there it is, I found it. Yeah, they went to the planet Morris, and the father wanted Anakin to become the one to balance the Force, to control the daughter and the son, the dark and light, you know, kind of embodiment of the Force. while the son steals or kidnaps Ahsoka. And during the struggle between Anakin, Obi-Wan, and the son, Ahsoka is killed. And so the daughter ends up giving her life to resurrect or bring Ahsoka back to life, which throws the balance out of, you know, the force out of balance, at least on Mortis. I almost wonder if the son is Snoke. No? Yeah? You don't remember this?
Hashtag your Snoke theory sucks.
You know, but you know what? This would be interesting because literally the son is thousands of years old. You know, he was injured in his fight with Anakin Skywalker, which would make Snoke be the way he is. He is the embodiment of the dark side, if you will. It, you know, he's been around during the rise and fall of the Empire. It hits every single thing that, like, we've heard about Snoke. And it's canon already. It's not something that is, you know, brand new.
I wonder, because here's the thing. General audiences aren't, like, if they do this as the reveal, general audiences will be like, what? Who?
I get that, but at the same time, like, they don't have to, like, go too far into his backstory, but you know, it's kind of like when they bring Saw Gerrera up in Rogue One. He's Saw Gerrera. He's an extreme rebel fighter. They brought it up in, you know, Claudia Gray's Bloodlines book, but, you know, just as, you know, it's kind of an extreme, but we know who Saw Gerrera is. They don't really talk about it. I'm sure they're not going to go into his backstory in the film because it's going to be zero relevant to the film. But we know who it is. We've analyzed, you know, the 4-episode arc that he was trained by Anakin Skywalker, and, you know, he blames himself for his sister's death. So I'm almost wondering if the son, who was the dark side embodiment of the Force, is actually Snoke.
I think the difference, though, between doing something like that with, like, Saul coming in, like Saul Guerrero coming in, versus Snoke being revealed to be a character from, like, the Clone Wars, is that Saul Guerrero isn't a main character. He's a side character.
Neither was the son. Neither was the son.
No. What I mean is, in the film, in Rogue One, he's not, like, the focus of the film.
That's true. I'll buy that. My only other argument for the son being Snoke, my only other argument is that it would make sense that the, you know, we've heard rumors of, you know, the joke of, you know, Luke, you know, instead of Rey being Luke's father, you know, Luke, I'm your father type thing. It says, no, you're my father. Like, she's the reincarnation of the daughter, you know, the embodiment of the light side, which would be why Rey would have to fight the son again, you know, Plagueis, you know, to bring balance to the Force. You know, that whole theory, that rumor that started, which whether we know it's true or not, and I don't want to drive too far off Ahsoka, but the only reason I brought this up was because as I was looking through Ahsoka's past, she died once to the sun. And could the sun be Plagueis? I don't know. That's just food for thought. Maybe go back and watch that episode of Clone Wars. And if you want to know, I believe it was season 3, episode 17, if my memory is correct. But definitely go take a look at it. The episode title is something Mortis. So, it's worth taking a look at it.
Okay. I will, only because I love you, Mikey.
Uh-huh, right? Yeah. You have to kind of... Yeah, I know. I know. It's one of those things where you're like, all right, whatever. But, you know, it's like I said, it's something to think, take a look at it. You know, I'm looking up to make sure I get the right episode right. Yep, it's... Altar of Mortis. It's episode 16. And then Ghost of Mortis is 17. So 16, 17, 2-episode arc.
Okay.
Just saying. You know, season 3, take a look at it in Clone Wars. And you see Ahsoka in there. So it's still on topic, kind of, maybe. I'm stretching it. But anyway, after Ahsoka died and came back, she still led her troops as a strong commander, eventually. And she eventually chooses to leave the Jedi Order. So she left the Jedi Order because she was framed, and we talked about this when we talked about Tarkin, but Tarkin was adamant that Ahsoka Tano was guilty. And obviously, you know, Anakin believed in the system. You know, he was friends with, you know, the Chancellor, He believed in the system, and he said, don't worry, it'll work itself out. And it wasn't until Barris actually came in and admitted it that she was exonerated. And at that point, you know, she did decide to walk away from the Jedi Order, which I'm assuming after that point is when the book picks up. Is that correct, Anya?
Sort of. There's a little bit of time after that.
Okay.
But it's fairly close to it.
Okay. So before we jump into can you kind of tell us a little bit more about the book in her time frame here? But why do you know, when we think of Ahsoka leaving the Jedi Order, you know, her path laid along the different, you know, her destiny laid along a different path than the Jedi itself. Why do you think, in Ahsoka's personality, why she would leave the Jedi Order? Now, obviously, she was accused of something she didn't do. And, you know, the people who were closest to her believed her, but, you know, Princess Leia was mounting her defense. But why do you think, not Princess Leia, Senator Amidala, sorry. Senator Amidala was wrong generation here. Senator Amidala was mounting her defense, but obviously people believed in her still. But why do you think she decided to leave the order?
Possibly because their ideals didn't match what she thought they were anymore. So we know, for example, that the Jedi Order changes a lot during the time when Ahsoka is involved. I think that the events surrounding her trial changed her opinion of the Jedi Order, honestly, and that she felt like she couldn't walk along that path anymore because she didn't believe it. And Ahsoka is always quite honest with herself, and I feel like her leaving is because she needed to forge her own path.
And I
feel like Ahsoka, more than most Jedi, is probably the closest that we've ever got to, like, a gray Jedi. So someone who's, like, almost solidly in the middle.
You know what's interesting is, I would almost say, I agree with you, almost like a gray Jedi. Especially, like, at Rebel, and, you know, during Rebels time. Maybe like even like the Bendu, if you will, kind of playing the middle ground. But I would say the reason for that is because Anakin Skywalker was her master, you know. And I think she left along the same reasons why Anakin almost fell to the dark. Why Anakin fell to the dark side, because yeah, he sees the corruption that's there. She sees the corruption that's there. She sees what's going on around it. But unlike Anakin, where he falls, she actually decides to walk away from it and stay above ground, if you will. Like, I don't think she is 100% good. You know, not that I don't think Ahsoka is a good guy in the scheme of good guy versus bad guy, but I think after, and again, I haven't read the book, so I can't say it, but I think after she leaves the Order, she reevaluates what the Jedi Order ideals were versus what was actually happening, and she toes that line on her own much better than what the Jedi Order was doing. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense.
Especially because when we're talking about Clone Wars, you know, the very first episode, we have the Jedi making deals with the Hutts, which we know are gangsters, to be able to get to get access to certain hyperspace lanes. So they're already kind of going against their own values from the very get-go of the beginning of the Clone Wars. And Ahsoka, I think, kind of sees that. So tell us a little bit about Ahsoka in the book, without spoilers. Like, obviously her character grows. She has to grow to become the character that we see as Fulcrum in Rebels. So is there anything that stood out specifically to you? Because again, I can't speak to it.
There are some really big things that stick out. Like, for example, the Siege of Mandalore is a huge part of the book. We've seen it, like, referenced in other stuff, and it's one of the stories that didn't get told because the Clone Wars was cancelled. But we actually get to see more about that and what happened and Ahsoka's role in that, and
does that have to deal with Obi-Wan Kenobi 2 or just her?
So this is right before Revenge of the Sith, so right before it.
Okay, so Obi-Wan is not involved then.
they were, him and Anakin were supposed to be, but basically the beginning of Revenge of the Sith happened, and he and Anakin had to go and deal with Grievous.
Okay.
So it's basically Ahsoka leading the 501st Clone Battalion and doing the Siege of Mandalore and going up against another familiar face.
Interesting. So I'm excited to read this book and listen to it at the same time. So
we also get a little bit more about her relationship with Rex and why they have such a close relationship still when he reappears in Rebels. Like, there's some more stuff between them that's, like, really, really interesting and explains some more stuff post the Clone Wars for those two. A lot about her lightsabers. The ones that she gave up, and then the ones that she
constructed.
The second lot that she constructed. There is some really cool stuff about the Kyber crystals and where she got the Kyber crystals for her lightsabers, the new ones that she constructed, where that actually came from. Like, that's really, really cool. What else was really interesting?
I want to talk about the lightsaber crystals for a second, because I briefly mentioned, like, you're like, oh, I know why Sith lightsabers are red. I'm like, well, I know why the EU said they're red. And literally, I have I pulled up the guide. That's why I talked about the red lightsaber crystals being synthetic crystals back in, again, this is all EU. You know, like Extended Universe, which is no longer canon. But back in the day, basically, the red crystals were synthetic crystals that were normally unsuitable for lightsabers. But the Sith discovered they can create synthetic crystals that were energized, magnetized, and modified with the power of the dark side of the Force in special furnaces, casting the crystal to glow in harmonic vibration. These artificial origins, the synthetic crystals, created more powerful lightsaber blades and could be more easily augmented. Also, their common usage by Sith and other Darksiders after their discovery caused synthetic crystals to become something of a staple among such groups. So that's why the synthetic crystals were red. Obviously, there could be other colors. We saw in the Young Jedi Knight series that Jaina, Han Solo's child at the time, synthetically grew a crystal also, which was purple. So there's definitely, you know, that's kind of where these crystals kind of came from in the EU. Now, you told me that something different has happened in the book, and we learn why they're red, which I thought was, like, really cool. New kind of lore, if you will, because I love lore.
Yeah, so it's not really a spoiler.
Learn it through the book.
You do learn it through the book. So basically, it goes into sort of a little bit of detail about why the Sith end up with red lightsabers versus every other color for the light side. And it basically is like the Kyber crystals choose the Force users and present themselves to who they want to own them. But dark side, like anyone who is on the dark side, they don't get that same connection with the crystal. So the only way that the Sith or a dark side Force user can get a Kyber crystal is by stealing them or taking out a Jedi and basically ripping it out of the lightsaber in order to construct their own. So basically, if they take the Kyber crystal from a Jedi lightsaber and then bend the crystal to their will and put it into a new lightsaber, the Kyber crystal bleeds, and that's why it turns red.
I love that. That is amazing. I will say it's a completely different lore, which is great, and I love the new lore for it, and I would love to read more about, you know, we seen this happen. I'm sure we see a little bit of it in the book, which, like I said, can't wait for it. But I personally think that is a great addition to the Star Wars, you know, canon now.
So I think it's a lot more disturbing.
it is more disturbing, and I think that is I think that's the point. You know, yeah. It makes the Sith and the dark side. It makes, you know, reflecting on Kylo Ren with this unstable kyber crystal in his lightsaber with, you know, the crossguard design, even more disturbing. You know, the fact that he kills Han Solo with, like, it's like, it's just like, man, Ben is really messed up. And I know Leia really wants to go ahead and get, you know, her son back together, you know, her family back together. But, you know, it's just kind of rough.
Yeah. But it also explains, like, this new lore doesn't take away from, like, us having seen, like, for example, Grievous using lightsabers of all different colors. Mm-hmm. It'll only bleed red if they use the kyber crystal in a new lightsaber.
Yeah, because
so if it's a stolen lightsaber that they're using, it won't turn red. It's only if they basically steal the kyber crystal inside that lightsaber to build their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I like that. I like that. Like I said, I'm a big fan of the lore stuff, and that was something I was just really excited about when you told me that. So I wanted to make sure we talked about it. So anything else about the book that is of note? Obviously, we'll probably do a full review of it when I get back from my trip, and maybe we can get somebody on, an expert, to talk to us about Ahsoka.
Yeah, Ahsoka almost ended up on a planet that we saw in The Force Awakens at one point, and almost met a character that we were introduced to in The Force Awakens, but at the last minute decided not to go there, and it would have been, like, the most awesome thing, and I would have loved to have seen them interact. Mm. Well, I won't say who specifically, but it was really cool. Just the, all right, like, the connection. I'm trying to think what else. There's a more solid timeline on when they phased out clone troopers and replaced them with stormtroopers.
Okay, that's good.
So, yeah, there's a more solid timeline of that and when it started happening and how they phased it all out. And how that happened. So that was really interesting. And there was also quite a bit more about Bail Organa.
Well, that's nice. I've always been a big fan of Bail Organa, and I'm excited to see him in Rogue One, because we do know Jimmy Smith makes a appearance. I know Eric was super excited when we talked about that. But anyway, let's move on with the last bit of Ahsoka's life that we know about. Not to say that she didn't survive at the end of Season 2, but we're going to find out. So she returns in Star Wars Rebels as Fulcrum. We don't know anything about Fulcrum when we first find out, but by the end of Season 1, it's revealed that Fulcrum is none other than Ahsoka Tano, and she has returned. And boy, I was excited. I'm sure you were too, Donnie, when it first happened. But yeah, through all of Season 2, Ahsoka has shown up as Ahsoka to Ezra and to Kanan, and just been this amazing force, and kind of being able to show her, kind of just show that there is still good. There are still, not necessarily the Jedi, but there are force users still out there. And the best part about it was, I think she was even able to, you know, kind of show Ezra that how good Anakin Skywalker was, and be able to just mention it. But she was just such a strong user, force user in, you know, Season 2, and such a strong character that at the end, when she goes to the planet with Ezra and Kanan, and they're confronted by, you know, the Seventh Sister and the Eighth Brother and Maul, and then she faces off with Darth Vader at the end, you just want to hope that she survives that at the very end from that Sith machine. What do you think about that? Do you think she survived? Do you think she didn't survive? What do you think about Ahsoka in Season 2?
Oh, God. I think Ahsoka's survival is, like, the debate of, like, do we think she survived or didn't she survive? Like, that's the big thing that people are still debating. Like, even when I was at Rebels Press at Star Wars Celebration, like, it was all, it was, there was a vast majority of people who were like, so, is Ahsoka alive? Please give us anything. Anything. Give us,
I know, we're 4 episodes in and we still don't have, oh, technically 5 episodes in, right?
Yeah. And we don't have a solid confirmation.
The only thing we have, was at the end of episode 4 when we heard Fulcrum and you had Ezra respond, said, Ahsoka? And it's like, no, Fulcrum is just the name we give all of our undercover agents. And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. So you had a glimmer of hope for like a split second. And then it was dashed. Thank you.
Yeah. I would like for her to still be alive. I feel like her fate and Anakin's or Vader's is like very, very intertwined. And I don't want to think that she's gone. But at the same time, I feel like she would want to have done the job that Luke set out to do.
Mm-hmm. You know? I would agree. She, you know, you can't have her confront Vader and win. Like, yeah. She can't destroy Vader. Even though, how poetic it would be, her, you know, his Padawan. You know, at the same time, it's poetic that it's his son. So it's one of those things that she cannot take Luke's spot. But at the same time, you know, with Maul, you know, merging the two holocrons, we hear the twin sons, something about Obi, you know, we're guessing about Obi-Wan, Tatooine, Maul, you know, Maul said he survives, you know, is Ahsoka going to come back and go to Tatooine maybe? You know, I want her to survive and have some play. I want her to see Luke without Luke making an appearance, like from afar or something like that. I want her to at least know, even if she can't be the one to bring balance to the Force, she can't be the one to, you know, Luke was adamant that there was still good in Vader. You know, even though the Emperor was convinced that it had been driven all out of him. Kind of like what Snoke is trying to do with, you know, Kylo Ren. You know, I feel like Ahsoka recognized that it was Anakin and still felt the good in him. So I want her to have a good ending where she realizes her old master is going to get redeemed. And it may not be her that can do it, but there is still hope. You know, there is a new hope that's available
for her.
So I want Ahsoka to come back.
Even though, like, the end of season 2, in terms of, like, an arc for Ahsoka, it did come almost full circle and end in a way that could be quite definitive. And if that was the end, could still in some way be satisfying. Like, it wouldn't be...
But I want her to be alive.
Yeah, I want her to be alive. But there's something about it that I feel like is unfinished. Like,
I would agree with you.
The story isn't done yet.
And like I said, I feel like it's... She doesn't know if she can save Anakin. And there's the poetic justice to that. You know, there's a balance to it. But at the same time, we know Luke has to be the one to do it. And they've alluded to Tatooine already, where Luke is, where Ben Kenobi is. So I feel like they're leading to her coming back, even for a little bit. I don't think she's going to survive for many more seasons, but I think she'll be back in some form. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I'm hoping so, just because I really want a good ending to Ahsoka. But that would be my thoughts on Ahsoka here. Do you have any other thoughts on Ahsoka right now, Danya?
No. Oh. I hope we haven't seen the last of her.
I agree. I hope we haven't seen the last of her. If any of you guys have thoughts on Ahsoka, let us know. Just tweet at us at our radio podcast and we'll share our thoughts and maybe retweet those too. So thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at our radio podcast or on our Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
And I'm Danya.
Danya has a song for us.
No, I don't.
Come on.
I can't sing. This is...
All right, fine. I'm going to have to post this for people to see.
Let's see if I can do it. But, like, no judgment.
No judgment.
I am not a singer.
Danya, I love you. You're good.
I have, like, zero talent for singing. Oh, the things I do for podcasts, I swear to God.
This is amazing.
Poe. a pilot, a resistance pilot, Ray, a drop of golden sun. Finn, a name he calls himself, Han was killed by his own son. Snoke, a leader hunting Luke, Luke is hiding out from Snoke. Leia just wants her family back, and that brings us back to Poe.